from A Sound of Thunder, and I give you the right to rock!
The right to rock.
Live at Nightmare Studios, you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show, brought to you by therighttorock.com. Horns up. And now get ready for two guys who are so metal, they wear steel belted shoes. It's Genghis and Ragman.
We just look at a static, like a screenshot.
Shit, it's just like the pause button's on.
It's fucking...
John!
Hey,
stupid.
See up there.
John!
What the fuck do you want?
I'm sorry to catch you mid-stroke, buddy, but we kind of like to have the video start, if that's all right. No, Jesus.
All right, what are you listening?
It's fucking done. It's already done. Like,
dude.
Ready to go. Not tired or anything.
Did you put that, I had them come in with like these little, you know, the where they cut and cover the buttons with like a plastic rubbery type thing?
Like at the dentist's office?
Like a splash guard type thing.
Yeah,
they got that up there now.
Oh, good.
Even
they
on
need
the
it.
Remote.
They need that shit.
John, can you unfreeze
the fucking video so we can have something?
Hey, I kind of was, thought I was seeing the light for a minute.
Probably because the fucking thing's frozen.
No shit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Alright, give me five.
No, give him. We'll give you nothing. Get his. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Oh, wow, that was quick.
Look at you.
How did he do that? Shit. Now he probably needs to rest. Like it's worn him out.
What the fuck is this?
It looks wild.
We're gonna be like Star Trek, right?
Okay, it is.
He's like, I'm really old, but I'm gonna look hip, right?
Ah, so this is from the Download Festival?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, Donington.
Donington. Oh, well, I saw the Download sign up above everything.
Maybe Download and Donington. I think Download and Donington is the same thing now.
Oh, really? That's interesting. They kind of merged or something.
Well, I tell you what. I don't know if Gladys is still in. It's a little late for her.
Our research?
Yeah, let me...
Research librarian? Is this the...
Sometimes she can hear what we're talking about, and then she just pops shit up and says, you're right or you're not right.
Am I crazy enough to go ahead? Should I just go ahead and read what this is supposed to be?
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, this is Aerosmith, Rocks Donington, 2014. Fucking Steven. Comes on with it. That's not racist at all, his little headset. So, Amla, an Arabic Indian.
I just got confirmation from Gladys.
From downstairs?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Download and Donington are the same festival.
Excellent.
Thank you, Gladys.
Good old Gladys.
Yeah, she's never been on the show.
The cake's, never lie with her.
96.
She's 96.
The change.
That's right. You might have seen her in Monsters, Inc. She was the chick running the desk. But that's who she reminds me of. But anyway, it's the Aerosmith. This will be. So I've never actually seen an Aerosmith DVD or a video or a concert.
Well, I got to say, this thing was shot very, very well. It just came out here probably a couple months ago, right towards the end of summer. And I got to say, I enjoyed the DVD more than I did the last time I saw it. I saw him in the Toyota Center.
That's one of the funny things about, I mean, I don't know if it's worthy of a topic, but certainly something we could talk about, and that is these bands that are like considered classic, you know, legendary status bands like Aerosmith. But it's like, if I saw them coming to town, I'd be like, I don't think so. You know what I mean?
Really?
Like, I don't think I'd worry about, I mean, I could go listen to their albums where they're in their prime, and I don't have to pay like $100 for a ticket, because you know they'll just try to rip you off. And I don't have to go to some big giant ad like the fucking Pavilion. You know I hate the Woodlands because it's hot, it's terrible, it's just inconvenient as shit, basically, to go to the venue that plays them. And the price is outrageous for a decent seat. I don't want to sit out in the middle of on the lawn.
And the beer's outrageous,
nowhere.
Too.
And I'm getting more tired of it. Whereas I guess when I see a band that's nowhere near as legendary as these guys, but nonetheless makes kick-ass music.
Yeah.
And I can go see them in a small club where I can get closer to the band. You know, I mean, why the fuck wouldn't I prefer that to this kind of shit? I mean, I dig seeing the big bands, like, for instance, Maiden, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
We're never going to stop seeing fucking Maiden.
Never. No.
I mean, that's just, it's a given. But, you know, it's like, some of the bands that are like this, these big-ass bands that, like if Deep Purple came, it'd be cool to see them, but I don't know that I'd cry about it if the timing didn't work. You know, I wouldn't like bust my ass to go see him. But like Maiden, I'd bust my ass to go see him. Now, I say that and I wouldn't go to another state or even another city. I wouldn't go that far.
Right.
I just don't have that kind of time. Because I figure, look, dude, if you're that big, you can fucking play everywhere, wherever you want. But, I don't know. Maybe I'm being stupid. I just don't see Aerosmith, as big as they are, I like their stuff. I can't justify paying all that money and spending all that time and energy to go see him. I just watch this DVD. And be done with it and listen to their albums and enjoy their music.
Well, I got to say, Wifey and I went and saw them a few years ago. And
good show?
They were okay.
See, is what I'm saying.
But,
they're
I mean, this
old.
DVD, the DVC's better.
Exactly.
It's a better performance. Maybe they just stopped that night.
Maybe. Yeah, it could be. To be fair, bands aren't on every fucking night. Sometimes
I got to admit, too, the main reason we went is because Cheap Trick opened up.
Oh, nice.
And I was let down by Cheap Trick.
Oh, that sucks.
They were had an off night, too.
Who was it everybody?
Yeah.
I mean, Bunny was probably gone already by then.
I don't remember.
I don't remember when he died.
He's still alive.
What, Bunny Carlos?
Yeah.
I thought he died.
That's your third case.
Why is it offensive if you thought someone died and you got sick?
He's my uncle, damn it.
Oh, shut the fuck up. This guy.
His fucking uncle.
Oh,
no,
I thought
no.
he had pissed.
He
so
sick.
Everyone's in the band and they're all together.
Right.
Oh, cool. Because I thought it sucked.
I think it's Rick's son on drums, but I'm not sure.
I think for a while, yeah, somebody was. Somebody's son was in there.
There's some family.
But just filling in while he was sick.
Fucking family. Just like they got the Van Halen trip going home.
Yeah, no shit. But, okay, he's 65 now. Damn. Okay, well, I'm glad to know he's still kicking. I felt sad that I thought he had died.
Well, he was supposed to come back to the band. They had some business issues.
Oh, okay.
And they're just like, fuck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shame, too, when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says here, Gladys sent up this information. February 26, 2015, Robin Zander announced that the lawsuit was over. We've settled our differences. Bunny's a member of the band, but he's not touring and he's not recording. Oh, that's right. That was the deal. It was like he was still considered an official member of the band, mm-hmm. but he wasn't touring or recording with them.
Yeah.
That was weird. It's like, well, then you're not really in the band.
I wonder if he was suing them over the royalties or something like that. I don't know what the lawsuit was.
I don't know. I hope, though, that he's back.
Guys, if you need me to share a little bit of light, I can talk about Uncle Bunny.
No, we're good.
Uncle Bunny.
This guy. No, he, it says here that Xander continued. Bunny's a member of the band, but he's not touring, he's not recording. We've had our differences, but we're all settled up now, and hopefully we can forget about that era. These decisions that Cheap Trick makes, Bunny is a part of.
Oh, wow.
So it's like he's an active member of the band, but he just doesn't play or record.
So I didn't mean to sue you.
Yeah, so like, what the fuck? So that's weird. I mean, it's like, if you're not here sitting playing with us...
It was a joke!
You're not in the band.
It was a joke!
you're like doing a Mike Myers.
I was trying to do a Nigel Tufnel.
Nigel Tufnel. No, but I mean, that's a shame. I mean, I'd like to have them all there. Otherwise, everyone else is there, right? Same bass player, same... I mean, obviously, Rick and Robin aren't going anywhere, right?
No. Robin's the man, Rick's the man, and Peterson's there to stay, too. So it's three of the original guys.
I never remember the bass player.
Just another drummer.
I liked Tom Peterson because he's got that cool... He's one of the few people I see that will play like a 12-string bass. And I always thought those were cool. The only other one I ever saw play a 12-string bass was Doug Pinnick, who, by the way, as we record this, I saw at the Winery Dogs.
Oh, you did? Did you go talk to him?
No, I mean, he was trying to watch the show. I didn't want to bug him. He didn't show up till like the last third of the show.
He's a friend of the show. He gave you a kiss.
Let him know that.
He gave you a kiss.
That's sweet.
Hey, Greg.
That's really sweet. I don't remember it, but okay. Okay.
Okay.
I'm lowering the shades.
Can somebody explain what happened?
The shades are lowering.
Well...
I don't want to see what
you
he's
don't
doing.
Want to go through that again. I won't even go through it.
Then let's leave it at that.
You guys are pieces.
Can we play a song, please?
Yes, that's a great idea.
Turn that thing off! What the bloody hell are you playing at?
The Right to Rock.
I tell you what, after watching this DVD. And you got to admit, gang, it's pretty well shot.
Does look badass.
The band's on fire. They sound good. Yep. It's really well shot, though, right?
But they I didn't know Santana was playing with them. Yeah. The one motherfucker looks like Carlos Santana.
What, Brad Whitford?
Is that who that is? That's Brad Whitford?
No, that's Perry there.
That's no, but I mean, I thought Brad Whitford was a bass player. I always get those.
No, that's Tom Hamilton.
That's Tom Hamilton. Okay, then yeah. That is Brad Whitford on guitar. On
yeah,
rhythm.
He just looks old as shit now.
He does, dude. He looks
I guess he's almost pushing 70.
That's the thing. A lot of these dudes, I mean, like we said, fucking Bunny, Carlos is 65.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Nielsen and Xander, all those guys are about the same age too, right?
Well, dude.
There's not a huge difference in age, is there?
When I was doing the review for this DVD... I looked up I was just curious to see how old Tyler was. Mm-hmm. He's like 69, 70.
That's what I mean.
He's still got the pipes.
Yeah. Rick Nielsen is 68.
Wow.
These fuckers are older than my parents.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's fucking unreal.
And you look at your parents, you're like, what happened here? These guys party their asses off.
What are you doing?
It's
like, yeah. How come you aren't doing that? Getting your ass out there. I could have been rich.
Well, what I was going to say, though, as we'll play a song like we always do with the artists that we feature on DVD, I was listening to this thing, and No More, No More came on off the Toys in the Attic record.
Nice.
And I forgot how much I love that fucking song.
So he says, I don't care anymore.
No more. No, it was Phil Collins.
Nice.
How about No More, No More off of Toys in the Attic?
Let's do it.
Bloods, things, the eyes of
You're that every time we mention Aerosmith, that's the album you mention, Toys. You love Toys.
I love Toys. Yeah, it's a great record.
It's a good record. Yeah.
I got on a kick though, probably a couple years ago, where I started buying a bunch of old Aerosmith.
Oh, okay.
I didn't buy the whole catalog, but
no, that'd be a lot.
I'm one of the guys that likes some of the older stuff. I mean, newer stuff.
Oh, okay.
Like Nine Lives.
Oh.
And Just Push Play.
Janie's Got a Gun.
Well, that was, what was that off of? Was that off Pump?
Maybe.
That was off Pump. I like that record. It just got too played out.
It's when they get, well, they had their resurgence, and of course, mm-hmm. they totally, not them necessarily, maybe their management or whatever, built into the nostalgia. They really went after that.
But I went back and bought Done With Mirrors, which was the record that reunited Perry and Tyler. And I even bought the record, I think, Rockin' a Hard Place, the one they did without Perry.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the early 80s.
Who was the guitarist on it?
Oh, shit.
Greg Howe.
Jimmy Crespo or something like that.
Wow, I have no idea who
that
is.
Hold on. Gladys. Yeah. So she's coming up with this. Well, she's coming up. That was a good record. I'm trying to think of that. That song I really dug off there.
And that was, which one you say? That was,
Rockin' a Hard Place.
Rockin' a Hard Place, that's right. Night in the Ruts.
That was a live record.
Mm-hmm. And then after that was Rockin' a Hard Place.
I think that's right when Perry left.
Yeah, he did the Joe Perry project, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy Crespo.
Look at me.
Yeah, you fucking rock the shit out of that.
Oh, there's that one song. Let's play this too. Yeah. When the lightning strikes.
Let's do it.
And let's do it.
Thunder rolls. So not a bad album, all in all. I mean, I think it went gold.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. I actually bought it. I had it on vinyl.
Nice.
And then went back, you know, several years later, like a couple years ago, and bought it on CD. I was like, dude, I love this record. And it was okay. But it wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
Okay.
And then I saw them when they reunited with Perry on the Done With Mirrors tour.
Uh-huh.
What a great show. Guess who the opening act was?
Oh.
Black and Blue in their prime.
Nice.
Let's play some Black and Blue.
Let's do that.
How about a little bit of Wicked Bitch?
Yeah.
So these guys have been fucking rocking for fucking ever, I guess. Totally. And you've got, I mean, they're in their fucking 60s. And I don't know. I guess I don't have any thinking about stopping or anything, I don't guess. I mean, they've been around since 1970.
Yeah.
That's a long fucking time, dude.
Guys, this is pretty fucking painful for me.
Why?
Okay.
How soon you forget I was the lead vocalist in this band, and you're making me play this fucking video, really?
Yep. Yeah, really. It's a great fucking video.
And you're playing it great.
If you knew how many moves and the vocal lines that they stole from me, you'd be appalled.
Thank God that's not a problem.
We're not really concerned with that. Can you go back to doing your duties?
Duty?
How did I know that would get him? Like a kid with a toy to play with.
Shit.
Think about it, though. Set from 1970 to the present, they've been around 45 fucking years.
Yeah.
Holy
shit. And listen
shit.
To them. Don't they sound great?
They do, actually.
I mean, this ain't an Aerosmith tribute show, but DVD is really phenomenal.
It's cheap. I have to say, I have to call out your boy, though. I have to put this dude on blast. Fucking Steve Tyler did the fucking Such a Kiss decline of Western civilization moment where it's like,
oh, at the beginning,
will this be real at all, or is this going to be completely staged like a motherfucker?
Yeah.
And like, of course it was. All they go to all the different dressing rooms, like they're looking for everybody, and the camera goes to Steven Tyler's dressing room. As soon as you open the door, all these fucking like hot chicks, what are supposed to be hot chicks, come walking out, including one chick who was completely topless that had like her hair covering her chest, and she just walks out like, oh, pardon me, and walks by, and he's just like, comes out and looks at the camera like, oh, what are you doing?
Oh, where did you guys Please. Come from?
And he's got the fucking dirty Sanchez mustache going on here. He looks ridiculous. But, like you said, they sound fucking amazing. I'll give him that.
And look at, for 70, look how well he
Fuck
moves.
Fuck yeah, dude. Steven Tyler, the
I
fact
can't
that he
move
can
that
even
good.
Move. Oh yeah, the fact that he can even move, and he's 67 years old.
67, I know he's close okay. to 70.
He's the demon of screaming, Holmes.
And then Perry looks good, too.
The Toxic Twins, Holmes.
Except for that jacket. Who dressed him?
Where do they grow you?
Well, I tell you what, dude, I am extremely parched.
Fuck yeah, dude, it's been too long since we had a nice, fine beer.
Mr. G.
Lackluster.
That was. It was like.
It's like
the silent fart. Somebody fart.
It's like what these guys' farts probably sound like. It's a fucking old
fucking dust comes out.
It's a cloud of dust.
What's your glass over there?
It's over here.
It died. No. You got the wrong glass. I had a chalk glass for you. Oh, there you go. We get you.
Don't cry.
Look, I'm hiding stuff from you, Charlie. I'm hiding it.
No, so anyway, like I was going to say, these motherfuckers are still putting it out, and yet you've still got, still people getting influenced by them.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of intriguing. Like, I guess like the Stones is probably another good example of a band that's been around forever, and I think that's a case where I wouldn't mind seeing them, but to be honest, their music doesn't blow me away so much. Yeah, I recognize their legacy, but they weren't metal, obviously. And they weren't even really, they weren't hard rock.
No.
They were rock. But I mean rock. Like rock in the real sense, like as in it came from fucking blues and you know, mostly black music, right? The rhythm and blues and stuff, back when that's when it was. We call it blues, but it's like that's part of rhythm and blues, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, it's old, which came from gospel and all kinds of other stuff and some country. So it's still got a huge history to it.
So but, what are we drinking over there?
Let's get on with this here. This is from St. Arnold. This is the 2015 version of the dreaded Pumpkinator, Holmes.
Fuck yeah, baby.
I know you were excited about this shit. because it is a classic. It is still the the fall, the harvest season, and then we're gonna have a lot of fun with this Pumpkinator, which gets a 94 over at Beer Advocate. I got to tell you, as an American Double Imperial Stout with 10% ABV, you can hardly go wrong.
Exactly.
Let me read this one. 'Tis the same beer as Divine Reserve Number 9. If you have already reviewed that beer, please do not review it again, because we all know what these are like. The Divine Reserve section of St. Arnold is the really good shit, basically.
Yeah.
They're sort of a seasonal, only make it part of the year kind of shit. And it's usually, I think, is that the stuff that's actually put into their single batch beers?
Mm-hmm.
And they're brewed with a completely different recipe. And so they're identified by the number on the neck.
Oh, really?
So that's interesting. So I guess they don't put it on here because they're just telling you it is a 9. It's Reserve Number 9. But this is like the pumpkin version. And it's supposed to be the shit, as we know. So we're about to find out. Let's not even fuck around. The label is the usual St. Arnold label.
Right.
Where you got St. Arnold, he's got his hand up to the sky like, thanks God for this great-ass beer.
Yeah.
Although he wouldn't say the ass part. He'd frown upon that. But it's the pumpkin ass gets surrounded by pumpkins. And, your usual label. It's nothing particularly special. We're here for the beer, though.
Yeah.
We look this guy up to the monkey lamp. You can't see nothing through that.
We ain't saw shit.
That's right. So maybe 3.5?
Oh, God. I'm sorry I got my
That's aroma. All right. I don't blame you.
I think it's a pretty beer, ball.
3.5, 4.
Yeah, 3.5, 4.
Let's go for that aroma.
That's a 4.
That's nice. That's a 4. Awesome, yeah, no two. So let's clink this and let's get after it. Let's not even fuck around.
I've been dying.
Complex. A lot of complexity to this one.
Fucking delicious, dude.
Yeah. Wow, there's so many flavors going on there, I don't even know where to start.
The very end of your palate, too.
Mm-hmm. That's when they really, just kind of rise up like, don't worry, we're here.
No shit.
Oh, wow. Mm. That's nice. Interesting, on the appearance, we didn't talk about the lacing. Hardly any lacing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's when you opened it, you noticed it was kind of...
Yeah.
Didn't make much of a sound, but...
it's got plenty of carbonation still, though.
That's the thing. It's not like it's flat or anything.
No.
But the lacing's just not even there. It's very sort of sudsy and kind of disappears right away.
Mm.
It even tastes a little watery.
It's a little watery,
An Imperial Stout, right?
Yeah.
It's surprising, but... A lot of fantastic flavors happening there. What are you thinking? I definitely sense some spice...
Oh, well, yeah, the nutmeg a little bit.
Yeah, some nutmeg, some cinnamon.
Old cinnamon, a lot of pumpkin there.
This is clocking in at 59 degrees, so it's just about right.
Yeah.
For serving. Taste some, obviously, the pumpkin.
Oh, a little chocolate.
Not a lot of alcohol, surprisingly.
No, you don't taste it.
A little bit of chocolatey malt.
It comes back and grabs you by the poo-poo.
A little touch of caramel in there, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. This is a nice beer. I think
delicious.
It's
going to
get better. The more we drink it, better it'll
be. I think so, too.
So, mouthfeel, I guess we'll give that guy 3.5.
Yeah.
And for taste,
4.
Probably 4, yeah.
Yeah.
A little crazy enough to give it 4.
So, did it make an official 4?
It didn't quite make an official 4, to be honest. I mean, 3.5 at least.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Not, we can't say a 4, because we only had 2 4s out of the 4.
That's true.
So, it wouldn't be honest to say that.
3.5.
But it's a damn good beer.
Oh, it's excellent. Excellent. And I did a search. They were rationing this shit this year.
No shit?
Did I tell you about that?
No.
No, a friend of mine in Oklahoma told me, dude, you got the Pumpkinator's out. I'm like, fuck, I've been looking everywhere. And so I went to a Specs, sold out.
Oh, shit.
Then I went to a Randall's grocery store here in Houston.
I looked in the eye and said, get the fuck out of here.
Well, I looked at the beer section. There's none there. I'm like, fuck. I said, well, about a year ago when I think St. Arnold put out some other special ale, they had beer behind the counter. So I went back.
Up.
There was. And I said,
you know what I bet they do is some of the guys at the store really want some.
Mm-hmm.
And they know there's probably a policy like you can't be hoarding the beer because that's not right. So they probably just kind of put it out of sight. And if somebody asks, then it's like, well, here it is. But if nobody asks, it's like, guess it's mine. Then they take it home and who can blame them?
Except for a beer nerd like me.
Yeah, that's the thing. The smart ones come in and they go, where's that? And they're like, fuck.
Fuck that guy.
I know. It's like, stay away from the internet, you prick.
So I went, and the lady goes, how many you want? I said, I'll take 4. She goes to get the 4. I said, you know what? Give me one more. I'd like 5. She goes, sir, I'm not supposed to sell you more than 2, but I'm going to let you have 4.
So don't push me.
Yeah, no, like, she was like, right. Done. So after that, I had to go to another local grocery store
and weasel four out of this.
And it wasn't for the beer so much. I actually was getting wifey some wine. I was like, well, if they got a bottle, I'll buy it. Dude, they had three cases out. It's like, fuck. And there was no restriction.
He's grabbed it on the floor.
So I grabbed a couple more because I had to buy a couple for my buddy in Oklahoma. So I got seven total.
Fucking A, dude.
And five for me, two for my buddy.
Mm-hmm.
But I went back the following day. I was like, maybe I'll get one more. You know, I'm fucking drinking the Kool-Aid. I got to have more. You know, I'm the heroin addict. Took the heroin.
And I see this coming. You went back, gone.
Sold out.
Yeah, motherfucker. Gone. So you did good.
Yeah, so I got five. So now we have four.
You did good, Charlie. Thanks.
Anyway, we're hitting some weird shit over here. Yeah, I think we should hit another song.
What you got over there?
Knock
it out, tough guy.
There's a lot of really good music
that's
come out here recently.
Yeah, this fall has been really nice for music lately.
And it's going to make it really hard for the picks of the year because there's so much strong music coming out, you know, around one time here. I tell you what, I'm going to go with a new one off the brand new Killing Joke. I was jamming to that today. They got a brand new record called Pylon. And the song I want to go with is called Big Buzz. It kind of reminds me of some older Killing Joke. It's a little bit more melodic, not as heavy. Jess Coleman's got such a great voice.
Okay.
So let's go with Big Buzz. You got a topic over there.
Well, I was thinking we talked about, we mentioned it in the Halloween episode that we managed to survive. Holy shit.
Thank God, yeah.
Yeah, that was some freaky shit up there in Long Island.
Yeah, that was a nice little plane ride home.
Yeah, we fucking slept pretty good. I did. Fucking put the magazine in my head and said, fuck it. Only sleep.
Yeah, me too. I'm a little worried about if John was going to get kicked off the flight, but.
But what else is new? You figured you'd look out the fucking window and see him riding the wing like the gremlin from the Twilight Zone movie?
Let's get a message from the wino.
Oh, yeah?
Checking on us.
Yeah? What's he got to say over there?
Thought we were flooded out.
He's like, what happened,
you sons of bitches?
And you're like, no, we're fine. He's like, okay,
just later.
Like, didn't want to talk to you.
No, shit.
We talked about the idea of, you know, how much touring is too much touring. And by that, sort of the classic example, of course, is Metallica.
When is enough's enough?
I knew you'd say it. And I can't be mad at you, Holmes, because it's fucking enough's enough. But no, seriously,
we should play some.
We should.
Are we?
After we get this topic out. No, but basically, the idea that, like I said, is that you've got a band like Metallica is the classic example where they did that one. I think it was an Injustice for All tour.
Mm-hmm.
And they seemed like they toured for almost 2 years.
Yeah, they played a lot of
dude, you know. And so after a while, you're just like, it's cool that you're touring and all that, but how about making a new album? and fucking giving us a break.
But unfortunately, we got the Black Album holes.
See, and I secretly believe my thing is like, oh, that was the last material you had of any Cliff Burton shit. And now it's like anything you wrote now was completely your shit. Sans Cliff Burton. So they were probably shitting the bricks and going, we got to write shit by ourselves. What do we write? And that's notice that's when the sound was a little different. That. And so maybe they're just kind of stalling, not necessarily as a deliberate plan, but sort of like, well, let's just keep on touring. Yay. And it's like, how about a new album, guys? Like, can't. We're touring. You know what I mean? It's like, motherfucker, get back there. And then maybe they took a little more time off. I think they did, right? And then after finally enough time, they thought, okay, fuck it. Let's do this. They did their album. They did the Black Album. And it was okay. It wasn't a bad album.
It's okay.
Out of all the albums that were written without Cliff, you know, that's probably the most favorite, right, of people.
Yeah, it was
their
biggest.
All the Burton albums.
It was their Back in Black.
Right,
you know?
Leave out all the Burton albums.
Yeah.
It's their biggest album. And maybe even with them, it's still their biggest album. But that's only after the popularity built up with all the Burton material, right? I mean, it, for real guitar heads, I guess my point is, what are they going to tell you? Master Puppets, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the big fucking album, because that was fucking the pinnacle of their speed metal fucking repertoire.
Right.
And that's probably their best fucking tunes. And they, like I said, had other good tunes. They got a little more, I wouldn't say new metal, but, you know, a little more just kind of like with And Justice for All. That was a little more of that heavy bottom end stuff, really bassy.
It was still fairly technical, though.
Yeah. That was the end of the technicality, because, like I said, still had some Cliff Burton in them.
Yeah.
And then once all that material was gone, we had no more Cliff Burton material. Then it was up to them to write it as themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Newsted, and he was with them by then, right?
Yeah.
Newsted, you know, Hammett, Hetfield, and Ulrich. And that's what came out of them. And it was, like I said, it wasn't bad. But after that, notice it just kept sliding a little more kind of...
south.
Yeah, just it kept kind of... It didn't get any better.
I noticed a big difference on Injustice for All. It was a good record.
There were still touches of the Master of Puppets stuff.
Yeah. It was probably the last record I really loved from them.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't love it as much as Master of Puppets.
No, that's
they
to me, that's their greatest
album.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Their greatest album ever was Master of Puppets.
And then they did the Black record, which, I mean, James got injured on the Injustice for All tour at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people said, well, he can't play anymore. And that's why they went to a simpler style. But, I mean, he's still cranking out. He's been playing the old stuff still.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they're writing the more simplistic stuff.
Yeah. And like I said, my brother saw him. I've said this on previous shows. He saw him like a couple of years ago. And I said, and I'm thinking, oh, that's too bad. You're seeing the shitty version of Metallica. And he said, no, they sounded fucking awesome. They did. And I said, but they didn't play any of the old stuff, right? He goes, no, they played like almost all old stuff. I'm like, holy fuck. So they did all this classic stuff off Ride the Lightning and Master Puppets. And he's, oh, yeah. And he said, and they sounded great. I'm like, fuck, okay. Cool.
Interesting.
And it makes sense that after years, because that was years and years ago,
right.
Like 20-something years ago, that Hetfield got injured. So surely he's, you know, healed by now and got his old speed back, as much as you can at their age,
mm-hmm.
right? They're getting old, obviously. I mean, you see Kirk Hammett now, and he's like almost all, he's looking like Brad.
Yeah.
He's like almost all gray hair. It's amazing to see all his gray hair in his fucking hair. It's like, damn, you guys really are getting old.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, which is fine, whatever. But the point is, it's like, okay, you know, they can't be young forever. The only guy who looks like he's more weathered, but still looks like that is Dave Mustaine. He still always seems to kind of look the same.
Yeah, he didn't change much.
He always kind of looked like a shrunken head anyway. But anyway, so I just think that is there a kind of band where they're just like, they almost seem to tour more than they fucking write albums?
Well, yeah, they love the tour. They love being on the road. At least they on that album.
And even Rush. I mean, every 2 or 3 years, another album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They'll do some touring, and people want it. But
well,
they don't like tour.
They're done, right?
I think so. But they don't tour for like fucking 2 years at a time or whatever. There's just nobody can do that, especially at their age, man.
Well, you know, another one to bring up would be Motley Crue on this final farewell tour.
Yeah, how long has that tour been going on?
I think a couple years.
Yeah, it's just like,
and
it seems too much to me.
I saw him in Houston on the first time where I thought it was the last time. And then they came back.
Right.
And I think on the 31st of this year is supposed to be the last show.
Oh, okay.
So they're done, but, you know, I saw them again in San Antonio this summer, and I didn't dig it.
Well, that's the thing. I think the problem is if you tour that much, you're going to get tired, man.
Yeah.
you got to get worn out. And so how can you still keep the watch the first show of the tour and watch the last show of the tour and compare them? Mm-hmm. If the end of that tour is like 19 months later, there's no way that energy output's the same as when they started. Oh, true. And yeah. So, you know, the fans are kind of getting cheated. You know, whereas if you keep a nice short tour schedule, like, I don't know, 6 months or something, even if you do the where like some of these bands do, they'll do a leg. They'll do like maybe 5-6 months, then take some time off for the holidays or whatever, come right. back, pick it back up in February or something, and start the tour again and finish the other half of the tour. I'm like, that's fine with me. I don't give a shit. You know, like if Maiden wants to do it that way, I'm totally cool with that. By the way, did you hear about that? That now this time they've got an even bigger plane.
What?
Oh, really?
Maiden, yeah. It's like remember they had that one plane that they did for Flight 666?
Mm-hmm.
And then they're talking about this new one. They go, nope, they're like, Bruce is flying an even bigger motherfucking plane. Like, this motherfucker's gigantic, and it like holds everything, I think. And it's like, that sounds crazy, dude.
Well, what about some of these iconic bands are starting to taper back, like the Scorpions or...
Right.
Actually, the Scorpions have been on tour for a good while. AC/DC. Let's take AC/DC first.
Oh, yeah.
Example. In, say, Maiden at this point, and Priest.
Uh-huh.
Maiden's not coming here. Yet.
Okay.
I think they will.
I'm like, sure.
That leg didn't cover Texas. Mm. But then the Scorpions have been on tour for a year or so, back and forth between the U.S. and Europe, have not hit Texas.
Huh.
AC/DC did maybe 5 or 6 live dates this year in the U.S. Maybe a few more than that. Say 10.
Okay.
When is there not enough touring? When does it get to that point?
That's
I mean, I want to see AC/DC. I want to see the Scorpions.
I would. I've never seen AC/DC. I'd love to see them.
I want to see Maiden again. I want to see Priest again.
Yeah,
but they're not hitting our market because they've scaled back. And they probably said, okay, well, the hot markets are this. Or maybe they're not getting the right package to come to our town.
And maybe they're saving it. You know, that's the thing. I'd be in favor for take 2 years to do your tour, but don't do it constantly. You know what I mean? Like I say, play 4 months. Take off a couple of months, play another 4, and that way you can do stuff. Because I've seen tours, that's what I've noticed, is that it seems to affect with these bigger bands. They'll do like kind of run through the U.S. for like 4 or 5 months, and then you're like, oh, fuck, they didn't even come to Texas. What's with that? And then you find out, you know, the year turns around, and it's the next year, and now they're coming back again through a second time, but they're hitting all these other states they didn't hit before.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of spacing it out. So, and maybe that's because it's cheaper and it's not as grueling. Maybe you save money because you're flying at different times a year, depending on where you're going to. I mean, maybe they're really just thinking this out. And I'm like, that's fine with me. I don't care.
Maybe it's economics.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, as long as I get to see them, I don't care.
Right.
But my thing is, I don't want... Like, I started to get fatigue, and I loved... At that time, I was all into Metallica, and I was starting to get tired. I was like, you motherfuckers need to quit touring. And it's like, it was bothering me. I'm like, stop it already. It's all I hear about is Metallica. And I saw you... And then you came back, and I think, like I said, have there been tours where you saw the band at the beginning of the tour and then saw them again before that tour was over?
Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Most
you're
recent.
Like, this is weird. And you know, you did it because you wanted to. Nobody made you. But still, it's just like, that's kind of unusual.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, and I don't know that that's necessarily helping anybody. If you already played through this town on this tour, well, what are you going to come back for?
Right.
You know, go finish it up, save your money, whatever. Go write an album or something. You know, I'd rather have more materials, is my point. Record more albums so I can have more of your music.
Well, that's the interesting thing about the Crew is I just got another little update the other day where they're playing another area right outside of San Antonio. I'm like, dudes, you just played here to a half-packed house. It wasn't even packed. The first time around, when I saw him in Houston, packed.
Nice.
A friend of mine saw him in Houston. He said, man... They did maybe half full.
Huh.
So they're not even making the money. They're not even selling all the tickets.
Yeah.
Because there's no new product. They're playing the same set they've been playing for 2 years.
That too. That gets old, man.
Yeah.
If you see a band and you're like, oh, cool, they're coming back. So you get excited and go, oh, I get to see them again. You know, go back and it's like, this is pretty much the same set.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, well, why did I do this? And that's what I'm talking about. It's like, that. What else would come up when you're touring that fucking much? That's why I say it seems like there's a point at which you just like... it does, you're not, it's a law of diminishing returns, right? You know, I'm not getting any more out of this, that the fact that you're still fucking touring. Just kind of stop it.
And at one point, are they just going through the motions?
Yeah, you just sort of start to feel like you're just like, you're milking me now.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, so I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if they honestly are trying to milk us, or if they feel like they're doing us a favor, like trying to give us more love by coming back more. But
I don't know.
You know, like, for instance, I missed Symphony X this go-around.
Oh, you didn't go?
I wanted to go, and never ended up going. And it would be cool if later I found out, say, next year, all of a sudden, we're coming back again. And I'm like, oh, wow, second time. That would like to see him for that reason. But I don't know that it's going to happen.
But that's more, they're more of a supporting act. So, I mean, they could play on their own.
Yeah, they're not, like these.
They supported Overkill, right?
Oh, did they? I don't think so.
Yeah, Overkill headlined.
Really? I didn't know that. Okay. Yes. Huh.
And had it been... And I love Overkill.
Yeah, Overkill's good.
But had it been like Blind Guardian, like that one time we were going to go?
Oh, yeah.
Or somebody like that that I hadn't seen with Symphony X, I would have definitely made...
For real, yeah.
...an effort to go.
Yeah.
So.
And maybe that plays into it, too, that if you're touring that much, how does it affect the opening bands?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we getting to see more... opening bands? I mean, is it the same opening band? Is that helping their career, maybe? Or, you know, if it's helping, then sure, it's hard to complain. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing something for the little guy, whether it's deliberate or not. But maybe, for all we know, it's like it's not helping them. You know what I mean? Maybe they could be getting more exposure by being able to get off the tour. And then, I mean, they're not going to turn on the money.
Right.
But also, it's like, well, I could be writing more music so that we can put out more albums, so we can sell more, sell more stuff.
Yeah,
you know, and give people more material, you know. I don't know. That was just my idea of where that shit was going.
Yeah, I think you had a valid point over there.
Thanks. That's why I wear a hat, so I can hide it.
But, just last note here on Metallica. I'm to the point, I think I may have mentioned this on the show before, but they come on the radio, I turn the dial. I don't even care anymore.
Even if it's a classic?
Yeah. If they come to Houston... I have no motivation to go see him anymore.
I know, that's the thing. I think my brother, like I said, seen him a couple of times the last few years, and like he went to Vegas and saw him or something like that, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And I'm like, and I heard that one show where they did all the fucking monitors and shit. Sounded pretty cool
mm-hmm.
in terms of, okay, well, that's something new, something interactive almost. I'm like, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know that I would necessarily, because I guess I would worry that I'm not going to enjoy it like I did back in the day when they were just kicking ass.
Well, Trujillo bothers me too.
You always complain about
him.
Was he because he's just too much of a spaz?
Yeah, too much of a goofball.
He's just running around acting all weird.
Yeah.
He looks like a character from that Brutal Legend video game. Like he brought to life, like, woo!
You're the shit.
But no, I mean, I don't get nothing against him. I heard he's supposed to be a good bassist.
Yeah, he's supposed to be really good. He's just so fucking goofy. He's distracting to what he is.
Oh, okay.
He's just sitting in the background, stop being a fucking lurching little bass player guy. You know?
They just put him like in a cage or something.
Shit.
Well, cool,
goofy
huh?
Goofy bastard.
Where do we go from here?
Classics.
I think
Mr.
I could
G.
Do
it. Son, you got a classic over there.
A classic? You think I don't have a classic?
I know you don't.
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you, I'm out.
I wanted to, you know, I was on a real big Heart trip. Mm-hmm. And if you go to their old shit, man, they had some pretty bitching fucking tunes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, I mean, nothing really heavy enough for the show, maybe. I don't know if that would...
They're rocking.
Dude, I'm telling you, back in the day,
a little
dude.
Barracuda.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a video they had back in the day called Cities Burning.
Yeah.
I forget what record it was off of. I always dug that. When they did the Bad Animals record, the one that had Alone and stuff on it.
Uh-huh.
That was a kind of a heavy record.
Yeah, that was a very 80s metal kind of a sound. Yeah. But I fucking love those tunes, yeah. Man. Like Nothing at All and all that shit. Yeah. I love those tunes. And I know they're kind of, by today's standards, cheesy, but I fucking love them, dude.
You're such a fucking kick.
Dude, they rocked.
They totally fucking... That's the thing. They were beautiful, and they fucking rocked. I always get a thing for hot rockers.
Hold on. You want me to get your Kotex?
You motherfucker. Yeah, it's in my purse over there by the door, smart ass. No, but yeah, maybe let's play a little... I like Little Queen. You want to just throw that out?
Let's do it.
I was watching a video from the 70s, like 19, right in that mid 70s, 75, 76. There's some videos of them jamming when Nancy first got in the group, because Ann was in there first, and then she said, hey, my sister can play, and they brought her in. And people couldn't fucking believe it. They were like, because she'd do all this badass acoustical shit, like the opening to Crazy on You.
Yeah,
where you're just like, and they were just like, who plays that part? And she's like, I do. And it's like, somebody played it for you, and you're just lip singing or whatever on stage, right? She's like, "No, fucker, I played it," and people couldn't believe it. She's a really fucking good guitarist, you know. And you know, she's also gorgeous, and so was her sister back in the day, you know. And so I was always just like, "Dude, I could totally go for travel back in time." Just, I would like to be like a Doctor Who that just goes back in time and bangs hot chicks. And I would have gone back and done a fucking threesome with Wilson sisters.
Finally got that off your chest. After all these years.
That way I can die now.
This is funny, and I'm just going to go back to the video real quick.
What in the fuck?
Joe Perry is singing a song which no one knows what he's singing.
Yeah.
So for part of the video, there's a screen behind Joey Kramer where it was showing the lyrics, and now it's showing a video.
Why? Like they're all going to sing along to a song.
We know you don't know this song, right?
Because nobody ever fucking listened to it.
Shit. It's like, Joe, play the guitar. You don't sing so well, right?
It's like, and I got me capo on me second fret. How about that? With a little fucking capo.
But
no, all joking aside and stalling aside, what do you got for a classic?
Oh, I got a classic.
You don't have nothing.
Right up my sleeve of my pants.
Which is also known as my ass.
No shit. Manowar.
Ooh.
Pulling out an oldie but a goodie.
Ooh.
Ooh. Well.
Like that dude for the
Jinkies. fucking Jinkies. I used to say that a lot.
Jinkies?
Jinkies.
Like fucking Velma from Scooby-Doo.
Jinkies. Jinkies, Batman.
That one in Zoinks.
Zoinks. I do this in the car when I'm about to, so I don't curse in front of the male munchkin. I'm like, "Retro Reggie,"
and she's like, "I know what that is now, Dad."
Shit,
you trying not to cuss at me?
Little Manowar. How about All Men Play on 10?
Nice.
Paisan?
You did it.
I did.
You did it.
You got a pick of the Civic?
I do have the pick of the Civic, and you will not believe it. I was playing Wolfenstein, so I got the total fucking German nice. Shit going, dude. But you may have heard, I did a review on it recently, Act of Defiance,
mm-hmm.
which is old boys band, Chris Broderick and Sean Jover, formerly of Megadeth.
Okay, you talked about Dave a little bit ago.
They got together with old boy from Scar the Martyr on vocals, and from Shadows Fall, the guitarist Matt Bichon.
The other guy.
He does bass on this.
He's the other guy. He just knows the other guy. The other guy's in Anthrax, the other guy's over here.
Over there. No, but they're real fucking good. They did a new album called, I think it's Birth and the Burial?
It's all Patsy Cline covers, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's all basically just Patsy Cline covers. I mean, let's be honest. It's clearly they're ripping them off. No, but it's Birth and the Burial. That's their debut album, and it fucking rocks, dude. It's classic fucking just shredding. Just
nice.
Badass metal with some good shred. And, gosh, I don't know. There's a lot of good songs on here. Let's maybe go with
Thy Lord Belial.
Baby burp.
Oh.
That's what the metal munchkins call
it. Oh, the nasty baby burp.
You fucking hate them too. Everybody hates the baby burp.
And that's, which is, of course, why you do it constantly.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, check it out.
Definitely. Definitely. I've got a new band. I have not reviewed this yet because I just got it here recently. And these guys fucking just stole my heart.
I'm finding a way for these ass.
I'm about to cry over here. No, this band's really cool. They're a newer band. I discovered them. They were playing a song on Octane. And I was like, fuck, I dig this, man. The name of the band's called Red Sun Rising. I get their debut record called Polyester Zeal. a phenomenal record. It's probably going to be one of my records of the year. Just every song on the record's really, really good. Kind of like what you were going through with Act of Defiance.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, it's really hard. I mean, I love every fucking thing on here. But I tell you what, we'll go with Worlds Away.
You say Walter White?
Worlds Away.
All we got.
I'm spent.
We are spent. And guys, we hope you're enjoying our, we're actually giving you more bonus footage with our interview podcast. You don't get to hear us too much, but you get some great interviews. So
yeah, like, we, as part of our new policy, you know, we want to do better about getting the artists out there. They take the time to talk to us, so we don't want them to, you know, suffer for our schedule, you know. So then, so we're trying to get it. We talked to a guy. We try to get that shit out within a couple of weeks at most.
Oh, yeah. And we hope you guys are digging that.
Yeah, because we love talking to these people. We've talked to some really cool people lately.
And we did get hammered on Marty Friedman a little bit. It's like, we posted the interview and they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, in your post, he's not on tour in the U.S. anymore.
I know. That's how fucking long you took.
Oh, dude, Friedman's coming back in February to Tejas.
Nice.
You may have to do something.
You mean, like, not Houston?
Well, I know he's coming to Dallas.
Fuck.
Our Dallas correspondent, Lee, told me that they're going to Dallas. So.
The band?
Yep. Sir Olaf Graham.
Sweet, dude. Maybe we will. Fucking, mm-hmm. That would be awesome. That'd be a killer show.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, he's fucking Friedman, dude. He'll shred all over the
I'm just going to yell cacophony the whole time.
Cacophony! Fuck this. Play the Jason Becker stuff. Perpetual Burn! Oh, I mean Dragon's Kiss! He's like, fuck. And I'll just want to hear all the guitar. I want to hear all that shit. Because Scenes, that's my album, dude.
You know what you need to do? Wear a kimono and paint some little lines. Get some mascara.
We're about to get racist here. Yeah, let's do that.
Let's not go here.
Most honorable.
Oh, most honorable body.
Just fucking just, or like, who's that character that fucking Mickey Rooney played in Breakfast at Tiffany's? Just racist as a motherfucker with the big buck teeth. And he's like, no more make noise. He was just so. You look at it now, he's like, I can't believe they
didn't
put that
Jerry
shit
Lewis
out in a
do
movie.
Something like
dude.
That too?
Dude, every now and then. Yeah, you look at those old movies from the 50s, yeah. It's like,
casual racism out the ass, dude. They thought nothing of it. We look at it now and go, oh, you can't play that.
No.
Holy fuck. Like, what's the matter with you?
I want you to dress like a geisha girl.
Yeah, it's like, I think I'll do that. For you?
I can help you.
No, I'll do that myself.
No, I got a couple of kimonos in my closet.
I'm sure you do, but I don't want to wear them. They probably stand on their own.
You got any kabuki makeup?
Bet I do, motherfucker.
I was
going to
say, he was waiting for that shit. He was Johnny on the spot with that shit. Like, oh, fuck yeah. He was already digging inside in his purse for that shit. Like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
The man purse. The mercy likes to call it, but come on. It's a purse.
How did we start going so far south again?
It's the pumpkinator. I blame the pumpkinator.
I blame it all on the pumpkin.
Fuck you, pumpkin. Fuck you, whale.
So anyway, guys, thank you so much for your support. We hope you're digging what we've been doing. And like I said, we're just trying to get you more content, a little more timer. And as always, we want to give you two big
holes up.
This is the Sound of Thunder, and you're listening to the Genghis and Ragman Show. Horns up!
In the darkness, I can feel him. My brother calls from the other side. Twins born as one, now on the run I hide. Let me tell you.
Just a taste of the latest from one of my new favorite metal bands out of the DC area of all places. And we're lucky enough to have the entire band here tonight on the Genghis and Ragman Show, so please welcome everybody, Chris Herron, Josh Schwartz, Nina Osegueda, and Jesse Keen of A Sound of Thunder. How you guys doing?
Yo,
doing good.
We're good.
This is great. I've been wanting to talk to you guys for a while because I've started listening to you guys when I heard A Lesser Key of Solomon, your previous album. And y'all blew me away with your sound. I mean, it's not, I'm not going to say it's an earth-shattering sound. Like, it's an all-new kind of sound. But what you do like you're fucking veterans, man. Like, you've been doing it for decades and you sound fantastic. Where do y'all get your inspiration from? What are your influences?
Oh, it's quite different throughout the band. I'd say our meeting ground where all four of us meet together is probably Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, and Dio. And then, this is Josh, by the way. I'm the guitarist. I'm like into a lot of 70s stuff, Deep Purple, Black Sabbath, Blue Oyster Cult, and of course Iron Maiden, Priest, Saxon, that kind of stuff.
And this is Chris Herron, the drummer, and I'm pretty much into Rush. Okay.
How many times have you seen them live, buddy?
Guilty as charged. I've seen them 14 times.
Nice.
And Dream Theater and things like that, and Tool, and yeah.
Jesse here. I play bass and keyboards, and you know, I'm really into modern prog, but I do a lot of like 70s style, like rock and blues. Kind of what influences my playing the most, I think.
And this is Nina. I'm the singer, and I like the goofiest, stupidest heavy metal that I can find. So, one of my favorite albums is Jugulator. And that is something I would like to emulate throughout my career.
Well, great. Well, what is the connection? Because the new album, Tales from the Dark Side, Dead Side, sorry, is based on the Shadow Man comic book from the Valiant Comics Company. What is the connection between your album and comic books in general? I mean, were you guys already comic book fans and you approached them or they approached you? How did it go?
Well, to some degree, we're all fans of sci-fi and fantasy. You know, Nina and I are more into comic books. Jesse, I think, is more of a video game and novel fan, and Chris is more into novels. Really, we just walked up to the Valiant table at the Baltimore Comic Con in 2013. I was reading their stuff, and we just said, hey, we love you guys, and we'd like to do something with you. It was very spur of the moment, and surprisingly, they responded really well. They got us in touch with their top brass right away.
Wow.
And so... the connection was basically we were envisioning musically what the sound that would go with each of their characters, and Shadow Man, the character that this album is about, is based in New Orleans, and he's a voodoo-powered kind of anti-hero, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the blues and jazz associations with New Orleans, and the locales in the comic book are like graveyards and swamps. And he goes to this nether realm called the Dead Side, where dead souls hang out. And so he was the one character that seemed like he matched our music the most. He's definitely got, you know, fit the kind of Sabbath-y element of our style and the atmospheric element. And, you know, I think to a certain degree, like the Lesser Key of Solomon was almost like a training album for this, because we had already started to introduce that darker, more atmospheric stuff.
Which is great. I noticed too the covers for that album and this album. Is it the same artist? I love that style. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, that's our painter. His name's Dusan Markovic. He's from Serbia, and he's done our last three albums and an EP in a row now.
Looks amazing. Did he also do that Book of the Dead cover as well?
Yes, he did. That is the alternate album cover. The Kickstarter supporters got a CD with that cover on it. Nice. And we use it on that exclusive comic book that we had.
Well, you know, what's interesting is you mentioned the Baltimore Comic Con, and I think y'all had your record release party at it this year. Is that right?
Yes.
That's amazing, because I'm wondering how the reception was there, because I think a lot of comic book fans are actually also metalheads.
We definitely, at the con, ran into a lot of people who were fans of both. And... you know, people walk by, they take a look at your stuff, you say, you like heavy metal? Yeah, I do. And, you know, we played some samples of the music for them, and, you know, they loved it. But yeah, there's definitely a common thread. It's a bit of there's got to be a bit of dorkiness in both, right?
Yeah, you have to be into the possibility of telling a story. That requires some imagination, you know. It's definitely a very different thing from some other types of metal. And it was interesting, we got a few people that were, they said, yes, we're into metal, and then they listened to it, and it wasn't, they're like, oh, it's not death metal. So they weren't. And then we got a lot of people that said, well, I'm not really into metal, but they listened to it, and they're like, oh, I really like this because there's melody. And so I think we created a lot of new metal fans.
Nice. Though that's the thing, there's this funny intersection there with comic books, metal, especially concept albums, and video games. It's surprisingly a nerdy kind of intersection there.
Not surprising at all.
I've always thought that certain, you know, sounds and of course lyrics too, and album art paint a picture, and you know, they kind of transport you to a different place that you use your imagination to get to. And so, you know, comics are kind of the same way. So I think it's a natural tie-in.
Nice. Well, you guys also mentioned Kickstarter. I think like for the last two or three albums, you've done that. Is that right?
Yeah, this was the third album in a row that we funded with Kickstarter.
And it seems like every time you do it, you raise more money each time. So I guess your popularity is growing. It's an effective situation for you.
I think it's a couple things. We've done the best possible job we can to try and give the fans as much as we can. So it's not about trying to raise as much money or make as much of a margin as we can. It's trying to use the money we raise to make the best, coolest stuff we can, and to try to make sure that every fan is happy. And also, over the years, I think that crowdfunding has become a little more accepted and a little more common, and you've started to see bigger bands like Megadeth and Queensryche doing crowdfunding.
Yeah, that's the thing. I actually contributed to another Kickstarter campaign for a person who's on YouTube. She's a drummer, and she actually, for her debut album, did a Kickstarter, raised like six figures, a ridiculous amount of money, and it took her like 2 years to get the album out. But you guys sound absolutely amazing, and doing it like every year you have a new album, and you did it for like 20% of what she raised. So I don't know what your secret sauce is, but you guys have got this down to a science, it seems like.
The secret sauce is that we don't keep any of the money for ourselves.
That is true.
It is. Pretty much it.
You guys have been around since about 2008, I think that is in DC.
Yeah, it was just Chris and I in 2008.
Okay.
And yeah, Nina joined in 2009, and that was where we really started to get active. And then Jesse didn't join until the fall of 2010.
Oh, okay, I don't really think of DC as a metal town. Is it hard to get going in a place like that, or did you expand out into nearby areas?
Yeah, it's more definitely more of the suburbs than. DC proper has got a decent scene for hardcore and death and black metal.
Stoner metal.
Stoner metal big
and
time. And then, lots of hipsters. But as far as metal, traditional metal or anything with clean vocals, it's more Northern Virginia. And then Baltimore has a great scene. We play in Baltimore a lot.
Nice. All right. Well, let's talk more specifically about your new album, Tales from the Dead Side. It's a concept album based on a long-running comic series, like you said. First off, I want to talk about the storyline. When you are doing a concept album based on an existing property with a fully fledged storyline and characters, does that make it easier to write material, or is the pressure on even more to conform to an idea that's not your own?
I thought it was easier because it gave us a starting point. If you know what the story is, then you can kind of imagine what the vibe should be. And so the example I've been using is Punk Mambo, and you've got a title that infers a style right away, and then also that part of the story takes place in a swamp, and it gives you the visuals that you need already. And so I think we wrote this album faster than any other album we've ever written. It was pretty much all written in about 2 months.
And that's to say that this was the music for this record, it seems like, was written right on the heels of getting out of the studio for Lesser Key of Solomon.
Wow.
It's like this, a lot of these ideas were brand new for the record. Actually, most of them were brand new for the record, but the writing process for the actual music, like Josh said, as soon as we stepped out of the studio, it's 2 months and this record is basically musically written.
Yeah, I mean, we were already in the studio working on it when The Lesser Key of Solomon was released. We were almost done, actually. It's been a crazy 3 years of back-to-back. We were working on The Lesser Key when Time's Arrow came out. We were already in the studio on that. And then when we did the Kickstarter for Lesser Key, we committed to a bunch of cover songs. We kind of bit off more than we realized we were doing, and that turned into a full-length covers album. And then right around the same time, we made the connection with Valiant, and we didn't want to let that opportunity slip by. So it turned into really three albums back to back nonstop, which was Lesser Key, Tales from the Dead Side, and the Covers album, which is complete but not released yet. And that was all just a matter of months after Time's Arrow was done anyway. So it's been like just not in the studio.
It sounds like you guys just do so much recording and writing. It's amazing you have time to tour as well. Is there any conflict there, or are y'all just so full of this creative energy you're just constantly writing stuff?
We're constantly writing, I think. And then once we're done, we eventually put together an album. But we write so much that I think we record less than we actually have. So we have like a backlog of music we haven't even gotten out yet. So I think that's why the recording comes so quickly, because we've already got the music.
Yeah.
Just need to put it.
It's just a matter of deciding which ones we want to single out for the upcoming CD.
Yeah.
Nice. And when you guys record, I'm getting the vibe here that you guys probably record everybody all together in the studio live and try to get your best takes.
No.
Nope.
we do actually all live near each other. I think that's one advantage that we have, is we're not like a file transfer band where we all live all over and we don't meet up. You know, we play together twice a week, pretty much every week, and we know each other's styles, and we get to write in rehearsal. As far as the recording, we actually did our first EP and our first album together all in the same room, and recorded those on tape, actually. And that was interesting. It was a really hard way to work.
It was a learning experience, though, I think. I mean, really, at least I think in retrospect, it was very much a learning experience, because when we made the transition to, you know, fully digital, that background, at least from, I'm speaking for myself, it did help me, I think.
Yeah, I would think that digital is a little more forgiving compared to the old school tape analog way of doing it, and it probably gives you a leg up if you've started that way first.
And even though we may not all be playing at the same time, we certainly are at any given moment, any given time when one person is doing their part. There are usually at least one or two, or maybe the other three, in the studio, actually in the sound booth, and we're just, you know, sitting and contributing, and I think it adds something to it.
Yeah. When you work on tape, I mean, it takes a lot more time, and it's more expensive, really, is the main issue. And working digitally, it allows you to be creative in the studio, where you can just fire off takes and see what works, you know. Because we'll, especially on Tales from the Dead Side, we had the main compositions were completely written. The skeletons of the songs were written. But some of the melody layers or the solos or the overdubs were not written yet, and we were just trying to capture a little more spontaneity. So in that respect, it's actually more spontaneous to work digitally, because you can just fire off as many takes as you want and just try and capture what you're feeling at the moment, and you don't have to necessarily have it prepared. So it's, you know, it's a good way to work.
Well, you know, I'm always torn from my point of view. I'm not I like to play music, but I'm not good enough to record. But I always think that the more involved in story-like that the whole concept album idea gets, you know, sound effects and all this, that the more intriguing it is, the more engrossing it can be for the listener. But I would think that same sort of intricacy makes it harder to play, like, just a couple of songs if you do it live, because you don't have that narrative context. Do y'all foresee any trouble with that when you start playing these songs?
We've already been playing four of them out, and I mean, the songs musically, they were all born separately.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't like we wrote the albums from songs 1 to 10 in order, and they were all by each other. You know, they can all be played separately, and we'd already kind of set a precedent in this band where on the albums you get a lot of production. When you see us live, it's much more raw, and people tend to respond positively to that and be surprised that we go out there with as much energy as we do and just try and take your head off.
Well, the sound is fantastic. I like the opener specifically, Children of the Dark, where you start off with that sort of cool little 60s jazz vibe with the snapping fingers, and yet that same riff is what you use when you go all Sabbath-y with it, and you don't miss a beat. And I love that kind of interplay. That's I think the proggy sort of part of y'all's sound, where you are able to take themes and use them and reuse them in a musical sense, and you can change the sort of background structure of it and still keep that same feel of it, and that to me is always just brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Well, we were trying to do the movie thing. I mean, that was that that theme at the beginning is Master Dark's theme. He's the main villain.
Ah.
So you hear it. It actually comes back in the middle of Tower of Souls with different chords under it.
Right.
When there's that narration in the middle of the song, you hear that the Master Dark theme comes back there. And then it happens once again with different chords again in the middle of the song End Times. And there's a separate theme for Shadow Man that happens mostly in the transitions, but just kind of trying to draw the story, bring the story together, and identify the characters with those themes.
Nice. And you guys worked again with Kevin Gutierrez, right? You worked with him on a previous album, isn't that right?
Yeah.
But this was his fourth album in a row with us.
Oh, okay. So he's been on all of those.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Everything since Out of the Darkness.
Yeah, we started with Kevin on our second album, and this Tales from the Dead Side is our fifth album, so he's been on all of them since then.
Nice. Is there something about him that, in particular, that you think sort of makes A Sound of Thunder more A Sound of Thunder?
Patience.
he likes our style. I mean, the kind of music that we play, he's told me this, is the kind of music that he was listening to when he was 13 years old, jumping on his bed, playing air guitar on a tennis racket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it just, you know, like we did a cover of Black Sabbath's Trashed from the Born Again album.
Nice.
Like that was a track that he listened to when he was 13. And, you know, it's just, he knows our style. And now he knows our personalities. Kevin's got a great personality. And, you know, it's just become more and more fun to work with him as we get more experience with him and as we get to know each other better.
That's great. Yeah, I certainly noticed that sort of, I don't know what the word for it is, but that sort of anthemic sort of feel to some of your songs, like later on in Children of the Dark, where Nina's just going, Children of the Dark. I can just see a whole sea of people out in the audience just fists up screaming that out. That's got to be fantastic.
That's it is goal. Fantastic, and we do that now, and that's like one of the first times that I've actually been able to get a crowd to interact with me when we started doing that. It feels so good.
Yeah, it was interesting. We weren't sure how that song was going to go over because it's fairly complicated, and it doesn't have the normal structure where the parts repeat. Like, the third verse of that song is completely different from the first two verses. It's completely different chords, and we just thought that maybe it would be too complex to go over live, and people just took to it right away from the first time we played it. Nina got us crowd participation going, singing along on the intro, and it's been very fun. That was an extremely difficult song to get ready to play live.
Yes.
Like, we put more work into prepping that than probably any song we've ever done.
Oh, wow. So I guess that much more rewarding than when they respond like that.
Yeah, totally. I think we all pride ourselves on kind of playing on the edge of our abilities and trying to get better, and so that was definitely a good one for us.
Well, I think that's too. I think, like you described, when you said Kevin wanted to hear that kind of song that you can air guitar to, that's sort of the music you guys are writing, and it's not, I don't want to call it retro, because a lot of people use that in sort of a dismissive or derivative kind of way, and I don't think that's what you're doing. Your music makes you think of those anthemic sort of badass old school metal bands, but that's just how sort of, I guess, kind of pure that sound is. You're not trying to embellish it and throw a bunch of extra junk on it just so it can be on there and impress people with all the stuff you've added. But you just say, we just want to get to music where you can whip out your tennis racket and start doing windmills and sticking your fist up in the air at all the tunes like you did when you were a kid, that same sort of feeling, exuberance at listening to music.
I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's what we make is stuff that the four of us want to hear. And you know, we all have different interests, but this is like, if it's something that's on record, I think you can safely say that it's something that we all love.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, there's no consideration in this band for what's popular or what other people might like, because we're doing metal. There's no point. If we were worried about being popular or pleasing people, we should be playing indie or country. So, you know, for us, it's just what's fun to play, what's challenging to play, what tells the story that we want to tell, that kind of thing.
So far, what have you seen in your audiences? Do you notice any kind of a younger crowd coming in, or is it sort of the same sort of people that you see from town to town, or what's the demographic here?
It's a mix. I mean, there's definitely like the old guard, like the guys that are like 50 and were into like metal in the early 80s, that kind of scene. And then the other side of it is the like 18 to 25 year olds that are like just getting into that old stuff as kind of an underground thing, and they have the denim vests and patches.
Our fans are a little younger, I'd say.
Yeah.
Ah. Nice. Yeah, I'm unfortunately getting close to that 50 crowd, so I can appreciate that sound. I really do, and I like that you guys are knocking it out. Should we expect more concept albums from you guys in future? Obviously not every other album, but occasionally. Was it a fun experience, or do you just want to go back to the traditional metal stuff again?
No, definitely. We're doing another one.
Not next. Well,
not next.
It would be nice to do one at some point based on our own story.
I think it has to be somewhat organic. It just can't be, okay, we're going to do one. I think the way this band works is that, oh, wow, I think that will work for a concept album. And then we, like we were saying earlier, you know, we have so much musical pieces of music and musical ideas on stored away that we, you know, it's relatively easy for us to, you know, get things together, get something together, and you know, and make something of it.
On the other hand, we had been talking about doing a concept record, basically around the time that we were writing Lesser Key. Like around the time that we were doing the actual recording process, and that one is all done before Josh even had, you know, gone and spoken to the guys at the Valiant booth at the Comic-Con. We had been talking about doing a concept record.
Yeah, I mean, Lesser Key is, it's not a concept record, but it kind of almost is. It's like, it's a themed record. I mean, every song on that album is about something supernatural in some respect, except maybe Master of Pain, but I think that we...
No, it is.
But there's either demons or ghosts or zombies or something in every song on that album, so it's kind of our Halloween album, I like to say.
We love a good Halloween album.
And the Valiant thing just came around at the perfect time. I think if we hadn't have done the Shadow Man album with Valiant, that we might have gone off and done our own concept album by now. But I think the Valiant album kind of plugged that gap for now. And I think we'll do a couple more traditional albums before we get back to doing another concept album.
Sweet. Well, what about upcoming touring plans? Can we expect to see you guys live nearby in the coming months?
Depends on where nearby is.
Well, yeah. We're down in Texas, so it might be a while.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah, we're going to be there in November. We're going to Houston and Austin, and then
Oklahoma City.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Fantastic. In November, you say, cool, because we're in Houston, so I can't wait to see you guys.
Well, that's going to be awesome. Perfect.
We're there on November 13th, yes. I believe, in Houston.
Holy crap. Well, I got to go get my tickets, man. I can't wait. That's really going to be a hell of a show. Who are you guys playing with?
Good question. Good question.
I wrote it down somewhere.
You'll find out.
We were playing with local band.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
okay.
local band.
Hey, that's fine by me. I will go definitely just to see you guys, because you guys sound fantastic. I want to go ahead and then at this point let all the listeners know that A Sound of Thunder's latest album, Tales from the Dead Side, is available from Mad Neptune Records and can be purchased online at iTunes, Amazon, Bandcamp, probably anywhere online stuff is. And you guys can learn more about the band at their website, asoundofthunderband.com, right?
Yep.
And if people are interested in the album, they come to our website and find our official store. Everything we like to go direct to the fans when we can. We keep everything a little cheaper when we go direct to the fans, and there's always a free autograph option on everything. And there's a bunch of merch on the band store that's not available on the other sites. So
fantastic. So before we go, anything else you guys want to tell the fans?
Thank you.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, we wouldn't be here without you, so.
Please buy more stuff.
Well, all right. Well, Nina, Josh, Chris, and Jesse, A Sound of Thunder, thanks for chatting with us, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Gangsta Ragman Show. We hope you check out our website at therighttherock.com, where you can find music and video reviews, along with occasional bits of other metal and beer-related info. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our shows post on a regular schedule, but we average a couple a month, so feel free to leave a review, tell your friends so we can spread the word. But above all, please check out the artists we play on the show, and support good music wherever you find it by buying it from your favorite merchant, which definitely includes the amazing Tracy G, we love you brother, who writes all of our original theme music. You can find him online at TracyG.com, so check him out. Well, that's it, and there it is. I'm your announcer, Joey Clams, reminding you to drink good beer, support good music, and keep those horns up.